Thanks, everybody, for tuning into The Shore Thing today. It is April 19th. Warren and Ryan here with you. Lots to talk about from the NBA playoffs. We have that. There's also an NFL story that came out after we recorded that I want to touch on regarding Tom Brady that I think is pretty interesting. That is definitely not getting talked about enough, but we'll have that and a couple other things going on. Right now, check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and the iHeartRadio app under the podcast section. Ryan, how's it going right now?
It's going good, man. Just had a good Easter with the family. Ate entirely too much food, so I woke up yesterday feeling like a big glutton, but it was all well worth it. But yeah, we're good. Suns are playing well. Things are looking up right now.
They played one game.
Yeah, they're still playing well.
They played well. Do you know, and here, this will really still another playoff series where the Suns have faced where they're going to win and they haven't beaten a team at full strength.
Oh, the other team. Can only play who you play.
It's the Pelicans. I'm not.
And, you know, we all know sooner or later the Suns will not be at full strength either because Chris Paul will undoubtedly go out. So, you know, it's only fair.
No. I mean, it's more of a joke than anything about that. But things are going well in the NBA. The playoffs have been great. All right, let's just jump right into it because I don't have anything here at the beginning. Last night, let's touch on last night. We got the Mavericks beating the Jazz in a nice fourth quarter comeback, which the Jazz have blown a lot of fourth quarter leads in the second half of the season. And we both thought that Luka wasn't going to play the first two games. And I thought that they could beat the Jazz without Luka for one game, maybe two games, but the series would be lost. And last night, it took career nights from two guys, Maxi Kleber, who has been god awful for about 2.5 months right now, goes 8 of 11 from three. A career night for him. And then Jalen Brunson has a career night. He was incredible. 41 points, never made more than four three-pointers in a game, hit six last night. It took career nights from two guys to just squeak by the Jazz. And now they get a 1-1 split, which is what you're hoping for. And then they're off the next 2 days and they play Thursday in Utah. I would still say, though, I would rest Luka on Thursday. Like, I know he started doing some more and he's itching to get out there. You got to split. Say you lose game three, you're down 2-1. Okay, he can come back on Saturday. I would feel more comfortable with him having 2 weeks off with the calf strain than rushing him back on Thursday. Because the thing, too, with the calf strain is that, like, we've seen guys that have calf strains before, like popping Achilles, Durant, mainly, and then he's out for all next year. It's a whole year lost. So is rushing him back with this team that gets to the semifinals, I think they could play a competitive series against the Suns. Don't think they're going to win, but is that really worth it for the greater downfall of potentially Luka getting more severely hurt? And I know you can't look at a guy getting severely hurt, but calf strains, we've seen some pretty serious injuries result to that.
Yeah, you know, I tend to disagree a little bit. Going back to game one, I mean, the Mavs were right there. They just couldn't make a bucket there at the end to kind of push themselves over the edge. They were, you know, within 1 point of the Jazz for a good portion of those last couple minutes. And then the Jazz just kind of ran away once the Mavs couldn't make a bucket. And then they find themselves in the same situation yesterday. And then, like you said, they are able to get that big-time bucket. Kleber hit a couple shots for him. Obviously, Jalen Brunson, like you said, had a career night. Goes for 40. And so, you know, if Luka's healthy, I think you play him. I think if he's good to go and he feels like he's good to go, then that's what you do. You know, they already took the risk and paid the price for it of playing him in that last game. And so now if he's ready to go, you let him go and, you know, let him go as much as he's able to. You know, I don't know. I doubt that they would go this route, but we see what the Warriors are doing with Steph and bringing him off the bench. I'm not saying bring Luka off the bench, but maybe just kind of limit his playing time a little bit. You know, give him 20, 25 minutes. I'll take 20, 25 minutes of Luka at 80% versus 0 minutes of Luka at all. And you know, just kind of see, you know, play it by ear. If it's a close game, you know, have him in there. If it's doesn't look like it, you know, the Mavs are going to be able to get it done, then you sit him down. You know, just kind of play it by ear and see if you're in the game. But I think if he's good to go in game three, you absolutely put him out there, because there's no guarantee that if you lose game three and just because he's ready to go game four, that you're going to win that game just because he's out there. You know what I mean? And I mean, you could say the same for game three of him playing, but nonetheless, I think he definitely gives them a better shot at it. And so if he's good to go, I think you put him in.
No, for sure. But I think you have to, he can't be out there. I would not play him at 80%. I wouldn't even play him. He's got to be 100% for me to play him.
That's the thing though. I don't think he's going to be 100%.
Well, then I wouldn't play him in the series unless he's 100%. I wouldn't play him in the series unless he's 100%. Like, this year doesn't do it. I know it's hard to say that this team isn't a championship team. It's this team with him playing, it's not a championship team. So again, I'm looking next year at when it's a different roster, when they can go out and get a second star in a trade, and things like that, and focus on next year rather than rush him back from an injury and where he could get more seriously hurt. I know that's a coward's way of looking at it, but I'm sorry. That's the way I'm looking at it. I would not want to rush him back too quickly when he can get potentially more hurt with the calf strain that he has. Like if it was say a different injury, like maybe like a foot or something, but the calf strain scares me more than anything.
Yeah, no, like you said, we've seen not only calf strains sit guys out for a long time, but when they do come back, you know, it affects other things, whether it is an Achilles, whether it's, you know, other things in the leg, you know, that's kind of the calf kind of holds a lot of stuff together right there and has a lot of pull and stretch on different parts of the body. So, you know, you're definitely risking him injuring himself further. But you know, he's got an injury risk anytime he steps on the court. And like we saw in the last game of the season, you know, there was obviously an injury risk, and that's exactly what happened. So if he's able to go, you know, at any point over, I'd say 75%, I think you let him go and just monitor his minutes and monitor how he feels and how he looks and how he's able to perform at that given point. You know, if you start him and he gives you, you know, 7-8 minutes and it's like, hey, look, this thing just ain't working, then guess what? You sit him down and you roll out Jalen Brunson in the same kind of role that you've had him, and everybody else kind of fills in the way they have the last two games.
Well, the thing too is they need him. They're going to need him because they're playing four guys 40 minutes a night. Yeah. Like Bullock played 45 minutes last night. Brunson and Finney-Smith played 42, and Dinwiddie was played 40 minutes. And then Kleba played 32. Dwight Powell pretty much. They were actually smart. Jason Kidd did a good job last night. They were like, hey, you know what? We're going to put Maxie's shooting the ball well. We're going to have Dwight Powell on the bench, because we saw what he did with Gobert the other in game one. Not very good. We're going to get Gobert trying to get him out in the get him to guard the corner. And if he doesn't, we'll just let Maxie shoot it. And Maxie was hot last night and pretty much won in the game with those 8 3-pointers. And I tweeted this, but I think Conley and Gobert need to be investigated for point shaving last night. Especially around the rim for Gobert. He missed what, 3 or 4 dunks. I saw he was 2 of 5 or 2 of 6 at the rim last night, missed 2 dunks. Conley, I know he was in foul trouble early, but he was horrific. And he was horrible. And then things went south when Jordan Clarkson had got his 5th foul for the Jazz. I'll tell you what, it was Jordan Clarkson time last night. It's always Jordan Clarkson time when he's on the court, but it was Jordan Clarkson time to the fullest last night.
Yeah, he, you know, he, Jordan Clarkson loves himself some Jordan Clarkson. Obviously him going after Bertans was kind of funny. And then kind of backing away as he was doing it. I thought I got a good kick out of that. But no, I mean, there's been tons of talk about how this Jazz team, like, this is kind of their last run, because there's a lot of guys that just don't like each other on that team. Mike Conley got a huge payday, that he's in the first year of a big contract. You know, and he's kind of an older guy. So I was surprised that, you know, not saying I was surprised at the money that he got once I found out how much money he got, or once I, realized how much money he got this year just recently. But, you know, Donovan Mitchell, he's obviously the star of that team. I just don't know how much longer this core group of him and Rudy Gobert and, you know, some of these other fellas are going to be around after this season, because there's a lot of, a lot of word of turmoil. And I think a performance like what we saw last night will just kind of bring all that to a head after. And like I said, they almost blew it game one as well. And, if you get back-to-back games where you blow big leads, that's obviously just going to throw fuel to the fire. And I think last night, I think they need a huge bounce-back game, the Jazz do, in game three, whether Luka is playing or not, to kind of keep this thing on the tracks. Because if not, who knows what happens.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would think if you're going to pick one guy to go, it's got to be Gobert. You got to keep Donovan Mitchell, and you got to send Gobert out there.
100%, like, absolutely.
Like, Donovan Mitchell, he is remarkable, but he also makes, like, he was 13 of 30 last night. Like, he had a ton of shots. I thought he played, like, pretty decently. And then you're like, man, he took 30 shots. He did have that weird skyhook at the end of the game. Did you see that?
Yeah.
That was a weird shot there. Like, he's a little bit of a conundrum. I saw people calling him the new DeMar DeRozan in the playoffs, which so far not a terrible take. But
Let me ask you a question, and I want you to answer it. Just answer it. Who are you taking if you have to start your franchise, Donovan Mitchell or Devin Booker?
Devin Booker.
Okay.
Why do people think that? I mean, I would take Devin
Booker. I've heard a couple people say that they'd take Donovan Mitchell over Devin Booker.
I mean, I don't know. They're both really good.
Oh, no doubt. And I think they're very similar in not play styles, but kind of what they can do on the court, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. It does.
Okay, I just a little side note there. Didn't mean to interrupt or derail the conversation.
No, you just want to, for some, you just want
no, because
more love for Devin Booker.
No, just last week, Ryan Russillo on his podcast said he would, a lot of people compare Devin Booker to Donovan Mitchell, and he would take Donovan Mitchell over Devin Booker, which I thought was a little surprising.
He said that?
He did.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. That's why. I mean, you can lose so much respect for a guy in just a matter of seconds.
That's pretty, I'm surprised by that.
Yeah, I was too. I was, that's why I posed the question.
I would say, though, I think Mitchell gets to the hoop way better than Booker, though.
But my
like,
pushback.
Go like ahead. They're both guards, but Booker to me lives more on the perimeter than Donovan Mitchell.
100%. And I think because he's a better shot maker than Donovan Mitchell, so he doesn't necessarily have to get to the rim as often.
But you're saying shot making, you could look at in different ways. Like Donovan Mitchell he's a good shot maker, like around the rim and everything. Like
he's a good finisher,
a great finisher. And Devin Booker can create on the outside better than him. But also, yeah. It's a different type of.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still got a good outside shot, Mitchell. I know last night he only shot 33. So he was 3 of 10, but he's still. I mean, he gets going. Mm-hmm. But like, what would you say? Would you say Kyrie's a good shot maker?
Yes.
And he's also an amazing finisher. Like he's
probably the best finisher around the rim.
Yes. Like he's got both going on.
100%.
Who do you think wins the series? Obviously the mood in Dallas has changed, but again,
I still think Dallas has a great shot. Like if gun to head right now, I don't know. I don't know if you could look up odds to win the series right now, they would be. But if I'm getting plus money for the Mavs, which you probably are, I'd still put my money on the Mavs. I think they still got a great shot at it, as close as both games have been. Like I said, they were right there in game one, and they were able to kind of go over. Again, like you said, it took a couple career nights for a couple guys, but hey, you know what I mean? It didn't take that on what was that, Saturday? And they were still right on the brink of winning that game. So I think the Mavs still got a great shot, whether Luka is playing or not.
But then on Saturday, I could say the Jazz shot horribly. They like the Mavs and Jazz both shot horribly from the field. And that's why it was close. And then last night, I mean, they shot 47% from three. They were 22 of 47. Like, I don't think the Mavs are going to shoot that lights out from three again the rest of the series. And if you had to tell me Maxey's going to make 8 of 11 from 3 again, I would say you're crazy.
He might not make 8 threes the rest of the series.
He made 9 threes the whole month of March.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like that's the like there's always a comeback, and the thing is the Jazz were one of the best 3-point shooting teams in the league this season, and they haven't really got hot from 3 yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it all depends obviously what Luka does, but I would say it's a coin flip. I would say it's a 50-50 coin flip right now.
Absolutely. I would totally agree.
I'm trying to find some playoff odds. They don't seem to have some series futures right now, but no, I would have to say it's a coin flip. It's a coin flip series for me right now, but if Luka comes back, I would have to favor it. To them, what do you for? You wanna get on something now, but this could be the ultimate. Like, see this, the line for Thursday's game. What do you have a guess of what the line for Thursday night's game is?
So I'll take a shot at that in a sec. But right now, according to DraftKings, if I'm looking at this right, they got the Jazz at -280 to win this series, and the Mavs at +210.
All right, let me take a look, but I would assume that's probably close to being right.
Yeah. So the line for Thursday's game, without cheating, I'd say the Jazz -7.
Yeah, 7.5.
Oh, nice.
That seems like a lot.
It does seem like a lot.
But then you got to think, I guess, a little bit at home, they'll play better, or they get the home thing, and they're banking on that Luka is still not going to play.
They get the home cooking. They get the racism from the fans. All the things. So yeah,
they get Mitt Romney waving at the players as they get fouled out there. That's got to add about 3 points, right?
At least.
So they have they've got that going on. Another NBA TV game on Thursday night, which I find pretty funny. All right, other series. Brooklyn Boston lived up to the billing on Sunday with the little buzzer beater. We finally got our first buzzer beater. Kyrie was sensational. Durant really wasn't great at all. Mm-hmm. So you got it. That's got 7 written all over it, I think. And the Nets came back. They were down double digits in the third quarter, 11 in the fourth quarter. And, I mean, Kyrie, he is something. And you want to know who has, I mean, Kyrie has the whole Boston Celtics fan base just rent free in his head, in their head. He is living rent free. And you want to know who is captain of that rent free of Kyrie in their head?
Portnoy.
I don't know. I haven't seen what he's been tweeting, but Albert Breer, you go take a look at Albert Breer and his Twitter account during the game on Sunday. I mean, that man, it's living rent-free. It is living rent-free in there.
You know, I got to admit, Kyrie. I think they both maybe did like a wife swap type of situation of living rent-free in each other's head, where Boston is clearly in Kyrie's head, and Kyrie, like you said, is clearly in the Boston fans' head just as much, if not more, in that whole situation, you know, doing the double bird head scratch, what I thought was hilarious move. And then he just does the blatant just here, suck on this one right here, and just goes, you know, single bird right at him. I love it. I think it's great. I think it's hilarious. You know, I think it's funny because of who the parties are, right? Like Kyrie, he can be very likable, but I mean, I think everybody knows he could also be very unlikable. And Boston fans, nobody likes Boston fans. Boston fans don't even like Boston fans. Boston players don't even like Boston fans. So the fact that they're the ones going head to head at each other, I think, is what makes this very, very funny and enjoyable to watch. You know, if it was like, I don't know, like Boogie Cousins and like San Antonio or something like that, I don't think it would be as entertaining. But, you know, because of who the parties are, I think there's what makes it so funny.
Well, and that Kyrie dropped 39, and he's still balling out. He's making everything. And the Nets probably should have hung on to one if they would have defended a little bit better out there. They would have had a better set at the end. Like they got to be kicking themselves after they came back.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, he was just, Kyrie was making everything down the stretch. Like, that's what makes it better. Like, if he's giving the double bird to the fans and everything, and he's bricking everything, that's no fun. But then he's backing it up.
Yeah, no, I mean, he like I said, he went out there and, you know, did his thing. And like you said, if Durant's just a fraction better, they probably win that game without any issue.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, it was a great play there at the end. I mean, it wasn't a great play, a great scramble by Boston there at the end. I was shocked as hell that Marcus Smart didn't take that wide open three. Well, looked like a wide open three. I'm surprised he didn't take that shot and gave up the pass. And Jason Tatum had a great finish at the hoop. But yeah, I think every game has the possibility to be like this or going to overtime, you know, for seven straight games.
All right. I want to say one more thing about the Mavs. Sorry, go back there for a second. And mainly last night's game. And I think I know what your response is going to be. And I have a retort for it. But is there any fan base that is more quickly on the refs than the Mavericks fans? Like, I swear to God, in any playoff game, like the playoff game I went to last year against the Clippers, last night they're going at the refs. Is there anyone that just is ready to go on the refs faster than Mavericks fans?
You know, maybe so, but nobody comes to mind right off the top of my head.
I thought you were going to say the Cavs fans, but the Cavs legitimately do get screwed every single night by the refs. And
every official from every sport just absolutely hates Cleveland. And
that's very true. Very true. But I will say, like, legitimately, I think if you went down and looked at the 2-minute report from the multiple times this season, you would see the Cavs get royally screwed. I mean, you could just remember the Charlotte game when the refs just gave them a free 4 points. The Hornets gave a free 4 points. When they take away on the play-in game on Friday night, they take away the three on the screen to Garland, and then they don't give a flagrant foul when Capella gets hurt because he's pushing him down, but he gets hurt, so they're like, oh, we can't call a flagrant foul. I'm just saying, the Mavs fans are very quickly on the refs for just a bunch of, like, foul calls that are called normally, nothing that's like a royal, like, screw job. Yeah. I would just like to get that out there.
Okay.
And I would, as my defending, as I said, the Cavs fans have legitimate gripes of flagrant fouls should be called or points taken off the board when they should stand, like, royally, travels not being called in the last seconds of games. Like, it was a thing. I have evidence. I can bring the tapes. I will bring the tapes if anybody wants the tapes. All right. Other series. What else do we have? Look at the Karl Anthony Towns led Memphis Grizzlies up 1-0.
First of all, he plays for the Timberwolves.
Timberwolves.
Second of all, we know damn well that they are only in this situation because of Anthony Edwards. That playing game, I mean, that was potential chef's kiss, Karl Anthony Towns right there. That was prime Karl Anthony Towns just shitting his pants in a huge spot. I mean, I wish we would have recorded that Thursday, because after that, I mean, I would have just taken the biggest victory lap around. This guy just the way he complains about anything that goes wrong for him is Tim Duncan-esque. Like, he has never committed a foul as in his entire life.
No NBA player has ever committed a foul.
But him more so than any. I mean, the palms up, like, stunned look. Like I said, you put a side-by-side of him and Tim Duncan, and they tell you to find the difference of the picture, it's the exact same picture. But that was perfect. But, you know, yeah, they get game one against the Grizz, which was a shocker. I thought this was going to be, you know, a 4-1 gentleman sweep, which, it, you know, very well could be still. But Anthony Edwards is just absolutely unreal. I mean, this guy has superstar written all over him. I think Anthony Edwards is very much going to go kind of the same track we've seen Ja here pretty quickly, and where he just kind of takes over a team and takes the league by storm with his explosiveness and his athleticism. And, you know, he's great in the media, always has great post and pregame interviews. So he's a lot of fun to watch. They're very much in this situation because of him and not because of Karl Anthony
Towns. Karl Anthony Towns was fantastic on Saturday.
Fantastic is a huge stretch of the word.
It was pretty much 30 and 13.
He was good enough.
My God, he was 11 of 18 from the field. He's 29 and 13 on the boards. He absolutely posterized Jaren Jackson Jr., which you don't really see a lot. That was a hell of a slam dunk. I mean, you are now digging.
That's not really a posterized.
Oh, shut up.
He was coming over on a rotation, and he didn't have the angle. And
nobody
so
dunks on Jaren Jackson.
It was a wide open dunk, and Jaren Jackson was in the vicinity of the hoop. And flexes on him. I mean, you want to talk about a guy showboating a meaningless dunk.
Oh my God. Here's the problem. Now you're doing a bit. You're doing a bit now with the Karl Anthony Towns.
No, go ahead and search Twitter and search either Cat or Karl Anthony Towns with my name next to it. And this goes back a long ways.
But you're not giving the guy any props. He was horrific on Wednesday night, Tuesday night, whenever that. No one's denying that. He was horrific Tuesday, but he bounced back in a big spot and they beat the Grizzlies by 13. Everybody,
it was huge.
Everybody thought that the Timberwolves had no chance. And I'll tell you what, I thought they could compete in this series because the thing that nobody talks about, they got some. I love Jaden McDaniels. When he gets hot, he gets hot. Beasley, he could shoot it from 3-2. They got the wings that can shoot. They got wings that can shoot, and they got multiple guys. They got Russell that can create off the dribble. He was horrific on Saturday. But as you said, Edwards, Towns, I mean, they got guys. They got guys out there that can cause problems. Like, they're a good team.
In spite of Karl Anthony Towns, you're absolutely correct. They are. D'Angelo Russell was great for the play-in game. Malik Beasley's been very good. Obviously, the Patrick Beverley, doesn't really do a whole lot, but he wants a lot of credit for doing a lot. Like I said, they had a great game one. I still think this is going to be the Grizzlies series. And, you know, if it doesn't go five games, it might go six. But, good start and, a good hat tip for Karl Anthony Towns. He can celebrate winning a playoff game and, take that back to Canada with him.
I think that they're going to win a couple. I think this is going six or seven. I think so. The Grizzlies might be better without Ja. I'm just going to point that out there. Did you see their record without him this year?
Yeah, trade Ja Morant right away. Trade him away.
Sure, I'll take him.
Of course.
They went like 19 and they went 20-2 without him this year. That's pretty good. Yeah, some are saying.
Nobody's smart. So they went 22 without him and they went what, like 35 and 10 with him or something?
20-2 with them, so they went 36-16.
Pretty good.
That's 20-2 is a better winning percentage than 26-16 or 14, whatever it is. Yeah, 36-14. Sorry. I mean, I don't know. Some people are saying.
Some people are morons.
Huh?
Some people are morons.
All right. Well, I'm just saying what some people are saying.
Okay.
All right. What else from the playoffs? Anything else? The other series. I do think the Hawks are going to come back and give the Heat a little bit of. I'm not surprised they lost on Sunday. They played the early game on Sunday, whatever. But I think the Hawks can give the Heat a little bit of a fight here.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know. I've never been a big believer in the Hawks either. We know that,
as that was shown last year when they made the Eastern Conference Finals.
Correct. Trae Young, very fine player, good at what he does. But I think he just needs somebody else alongside with him to really push his team over the edge that can, play at his level or close to it. They might win another game. They might win one game, might win two, but I think the Heat are going to keep rolling. The Heat to me are just like a complete team. Like obviously Jimmy Butler's probably the leader of that team scoring wise, but they got so many guys that can do so many different things for them. I'm not saying that they're not my pick to go to the finals out of the East, but they're just a very complete team. So it's going to take a lot more than a team like the Hawks to knock them out.
They are definitely the deepest team I think the whole NBA.
Yeah.
Because they had tons of injuries this year. They got a ton of guys out there. They played nine guys over, had 15 minutes or more. And then you don't really see that in the NBA right now.
Yeah.
especially in the playoffs when the rotation gets, and like Oladipo, he's still hurt. Markieff, or is it, do they have Markieff?
Yes.
Markieff, he hasn't played since Jokic drilled him in the back. I mean, those are two rotation guys that aren't even playing.
Yeah.
So you had those two guys. If they ever come back this year, then they'll be, they got even more ammo there. But, all right, that's pretty much it from the playoffs is what I have.
100%. Yeah.
All right. The story that has really not been talked about. Have you seen the Tom Brady story that came out last week in the Boston Globe? Did you hear about this?
About him wanting to go to the Dolphins, or about him going and taking a front office job with the Dolphins?
Yeah, not him wanting to. Him, that was the plan to do.
Right. Yeah, I did see this.
Why is this not being talked about more?
Because I don't think there's a whole lot of credence to it. You know what I mean? Like, I you know, surely it's been reported, but I just haven't seen a whole lot of, you know, water given to it, if that makes sense.
I mean, the Boston Globe wrote a whole, one of their lead guy wrote a whole article Sunday morning special about it. Yeah. And Florio's been saying this for weeks.
Yeah, I don't know. It's done and over with now. Like, it's not really going to happen.
I know, but still, that the fact that it was going to, well, the main reason why it's not being talked about is because Schefter or NFL Network haven't said anything about it. That's why. That's what I think.
Yeah.
But he was going, he retired the morning of the Brian Flores thing. In the morning, officially retired, blah, blah, blah. Then the Brian Flores lawsuit comes out. And he was retiring, going to take a front office job. And then like week one or two was going to say, I'm out of coming out of retirement and I'm going to play. Or maybe even before that, and I'm going to play. And Sean Payton was going to go coach, was going to be the coach. But it's because Sean Payton was already gone with the Saints. They could have worked out some compensation there. And then since Brady was already with the Dolphins organization as like a GM or president, whatever, they could send the Bucks. They had his playing rights. They would send him like a fourth round pick or a third round pick for the hassle, and he would have been playing for the Dolphins. I mean, this story is unbelievable.
Yeah, no, if that would have played out, that's something straight out of the show Ballers. You know, that's a storyline that the old Rock would have written. But no, very, very interesting to see if that would have happened. You know, a lot of should have, would have, could have, but you know, because of the Brian Flores thing, obviously that was all kind of mixed. But I mean, I agree, that's a huge storyline, and that's not getting talked about a whole lot. But again, I think it's because there were so many different things going on around the whole Tom Brady situation of leaving the Bucks or wanting to come back and this and that, whatever. That maybe that's why it's not really, or like I said, because the big dogs over at ESPN and elsewhere around aren't really talking about it. But it is quite remarkable if that would have played out.
So, I think, you know,
the likes of something we've never seen before.
I think it's just because the big wigs at ESPN are talking about it. And like, the thing is like,
well, Schefter's got to keep in good with Tom Brady's agent. That's why.
Yeah. He's got a lot of stuff to keep, a lot of make rights to do after his latest year. But like, the thing too, like the Flores thing, that's the reason why it's not going. Like, the Brian Flores lawsuit, they're like, well, we can't do this now because of this. Like, what if they just said, screw it, this is what we're going to do anyways, even with the Brian Flores lawsuit? Like, why do we care?
Yeah.
Like, what if they would have just done that? But
probably should have.
They maybe they still can't. Like, they can't now. But like, what if he would have just said, screw it, we're going to do this anyways?
Yeah.
But the whole Brian Flores thing robbed us of this amazing drama, as you said, that Ballers couldn't even write, wouldn't even write about this.
Yeah.
No, I mean, no, I just,
it's insane.
Like, I just don't think that it's not being talked about enough to me. Like, this should be being talked about and written about way more frequently than it has been. Did you watch any of the USFL this weekend?
I actually did. I know. I actually did. I watched the Michigan Panthers game.
Did they play the Houston Gamblers?
Yes.
I saw two plays in the third quarter of that game. In between, I turned off the streaming of the golf and waited for Channel 11 to turn the golf on Sunday.
So I watched that. I saw one play. Actually, I saw two plays from that. One, it was, the first one was a touchdown pass. Actually, a pretty nice throw and catch by whoever the Houston Gamblers quarterback is and whoever the wide receiver was at the point at that time. Nice little back corner fade route. Guy went up and got it. Perfect throw. And then I saw the ensuing 2-point conversion. That was a run right up the middle that was stopped short. And then I also watched is there a Florida team?
No clue. No idea.
Yeah, there was one other game that I watched for maybe 30 to 65 seconds. But yeah, so I did catch a few.
Okay, so you weren't like sitting down and watching a.
No, come on.
Well, okay. Well, you made it sound like I was watching this game. Like I was watching it. You just saw a couple of plays.
Correct.
Okay. As I said, I saw two plays. I did see some plays on Twitter. I don't know if that counts.
You were watching the games.
It was on the timeline. I saw Shea Patterson and Paxton Lynch were continuously getting clowned.
Yeah, Paxton Lynch. Probably just hang him up, buddy. Just go ahead and hang him up.
Shea Patterson should hang him up too.
Yeah, probably.
I
didn't see any of him.
He started and then got benched. And then I did. Jason Garrett was doing color commentary for the one game.
Oh, Jesus.
He's Jack Collinsworth. Shout out Nepotism. Was doing play by play. And Jason Garrett was doing the color commentary. And
did you just hear this the whole time?
No clapping. I didn't hear him clap at all. I will say for the minute I saw it sounded too, I don't know if all our P1 fans, all the ticket fans will know, it sounded too much like the fake Jason Garrett. And when I heard him talk, I couldn't get the fake Jason Garrett out of my head. But like some of the stuff he said, I didn't think it was terrible. Like he was obviously correctly identifying plays, or you got to do, he did. If he'll say this is the most Jason Garrett thing ever. The play was like third and like 15 or whatever, maybe third and 12, but it was a third and long and they ran like a little wide receiver screen that got 8 yards. And he was like, that's a great play there. It makes the field goal shorter. And then the guy missed a field goal like 30 yards to the left. And I was like, this is the Jason Garrett analysis I want. And we're not throwing the ball down the sticks to try and get a first down. We're going to throw it 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage and let the receiver try and get the extra 14 yards so he could do that. So I thought that was peak Jason Garrett commentary, but I didn't think it was from the minute, whatever I saw, he wasn't horrible.
Okay. That's fair. Yeah, I didn't catch any of it. So that's good to hear.
But
maybe we can get a Jason Garrett, Jason Witten booth where they both call the games.
A 3-man booth with Jack Collinsworth.
Yeah, perfect. Or let's go 4-man booth.
Book.
Jack, the Jasons, and Tones Romes. Let's get the band back together.
they could call it from a Duke basketball game they all went to together.
Perfect. Perfect.
Man. Also, upset that Romo and Garrett weren't at Coach K's last home game at.
I would have bet like, a mortgage on that.
I got to do some digging and figure out why they weren't there for that.
Yeah.
Because I thought they would have been prime candidates.
100% agree.
To attend that game. That didn't. I would have thought for sure they would have been there. But absolutely. They were. They were not. So, and Garrett, if anybody wants, he's on the NBC broadcast, obviously. So I don't know when what their TV situation is. I know they're on like NBC, Fox, FS1, Peacock, but I don't know what what time they're at. If you want to check out Jason Garrett doing the commentary. All right, what else going on? We got baseball. What, we're a week in, 10 games in, 11 games in. The Rangers, what have they won? They've won two games so far.
They got a ton of offense, just zero pitching.
Offense.
Jack Leiter can't get to the bigs fast enough.
I said they should just pitch him in. He started in Double A. Why not just bring him up in August and let him pitch the last 2 months in baseball? He's going to learn more doing that than he is in Double or Triple A.
Bring him up in June. Let him get a couple innings under his belt. Let him play in front of 10,000 people every time out of Frisco. I don't even know if Frisco carries 10,000 people. But and then bring him up in June, fill up the seats during the dog days of summer every time he pitches, and let him cook. You know, the guy's what, 19, 20, something like that. Just let him go.
Yeah, something like that. I will say I have seen the only Rangers win this year.
I was at the game.
I was at the game on Thursday when Ohtani pitched.
There you go.
Noah
Heim, big stick. I mean, that guy.
Yeah. You want to know a funny story? First of all, the Mike Trout home run he hit about. Did you see it on Thursday or not?
Yeah, I did see it. Yeah.
It was a rocket. I mean,
I think it was probably like 150 off the bat.
Oh, it was unbelievable. And if it was a little, I mean, it almost cleared the center field like batter's eye. It was so high up there. It was unbelievable. But Heim, the funniest thing was when he hits his grand slam. My buddy, this was actually an interesting stat I saw during the game. Someone tweeted out. So he was down 0-2 in the count, Heim, and put two horrible swings together. But the stat is that he was Shohei Ohtani on 0-2 counts when he's pitching, and he's throwing a splitter. The batters are 0-for-49. And the hit he gave up was the grand slam to Heim. He hit the splitter out to right field. So he's now 1-for-50, and he's given up a grand slam. But after the first two swings of that at bat, my buddy looks at me and he goes, "Those are two of the worst swings I've ever seen a major league pitcher take. a major league hitter ever take." And I mean, they were pretty poor swings. I've seen worse, but they were like, they were pretty bad swings. And the next pitch, just frozen roof out to right field. And we were dying laughing. It was, I mean, that's like the perfect thing. You're at a game and you just, it was so funny. It was chef's kiss. It was too good. I was just disappointed nobody around us didn't tap him on the shoulder and say like, "Good call," or anything like
that. Yeah.
They can hit, or they can hit, they just can't pitch to save their lives.
Yeah.
Which is going on. Did you, we didn't talk about this. What do you think about next year? One of the things they're adding next year is the, a more balanced schedule where every team plays everybody, where they play everybody, and you'll play at least, you'll have half of the National League teams play at home. What do you think about that?
I think that's smart. You know, you want to, quote unquote, grow the game. I think that's a little bit, you know, that's better because you're able to see more teams, you know, in your home stadium. And so, you know, I don't hate it at all. I kind of think that's how it should be. Obviously you want to play, or you need to play your division more often than you play the other teams, but, getting a more evenly spread out schedule where teams are playing other teams more often, I think it's smart.
No, I agree. I like it. You get more National League teams. And as you said, growing the game, you can go see more guys if you want to see. Like, why should someone that's in, say, Arizona, I mean, I don't know, they could drive to LA or whatever, but say Colorado, why should they be robbed of going to see, not having the chance to see Ohtani or Trout for like 3 years? What they do now is just it's the divisions and everything like that. Like, that's what you should want to do.
Like, I want to go see Fernando Tatis play. You know what I mean? Like, so the Padres, you know, if they come here, I get the opportunity to 100%.
Yeah. They did last year, Mr. Chance. This year they're not, but the next year they'll be here. Like, if you want to see Juan Soto, you're in luck this year.
Yeah.
Because they play here. It's just like a guessing game on that. But I like that. I like that. I don't really know what else in baseball has been going on right now so far.
Yeah, nothing. No, you know, we're just in the first little sprint of it. And then, you know, probably reconvene again in June and kind of take a good look at how things are going.
The Yankees. Yes. They're struggling offensively right now.
Yeah, I told you they're not going to make the playoffs.
It's expanded.
I don't care. They're not going to make the playoffs.
Okay. There was something else I was going to say about baseball. When is the, so last year was the year of the no hitters at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
We saw like, what, three or four in the first month. And then after June 1st, we never saw when they brought the new baseballs in.
Yeah.
We didn't see a no-hitter the rest of the year. When will the first no-hitter? Well, I mean, we could have had a perfect game if Dave Roberts isn't a moron.
The second time he's done that. You know that, right?
Who did he do it the first time?
Rich Hill.
But wasn't he like up way high on the pitch counts, and that was in like the sixth inning or something?
Yeah. But still, I mean, he's not afraid to pull a guy with a perfect game or no. Or I think Rich Hill still had a perfect game at that point, and it became a combined no hitter. But yeah, I mean, just unreal. You know, shout out to Kershaw saying that was the right decision. We all know that he doesn't believe that, but you know, he's got his guys back for a minute. But I say next month we get our first no. I'll call my shot next month.
By the end of May, we get our first one.
Yeah, by before June 1st,
yes,
we will have our first no-hitter.
Okay, that's good. I'll tell you what, Kershaw's off to a great start this year.
Yeah.
He pitched
gave
again
up a moonshot to Albies last night. Other than that, he's pitching well.
I mean, he's got – okay, well, never – I scratched that. He gave up 4 runs in 5 innings last night, so let's – but when I went to bed, I went to bed before the fifth inning, so I didn't realize he gave up a bunch of. He's got to keep up with the other Highland Park pro athletes right now. I mean, pressure's on.
Yeah.
One guy won a Super Bowl MVP. The other guy won the Masters. Like, come
well,
on.
Well, you could make the argument he started it by winning World Series.
Yeah, but I would say that he was not the. He was a stalwart of the Dodgers team, but I would say if people would say that he was not.
They didn't win the World Series because
of him.
Correct.
He got the last couple outs, I think, or something like that. But we all know his postseason stuff.
Yeah.
He was his typical self. So he's got to keep up with the Highland Park guys. All right. Anything else, Ryan, to talk about? The drafts next week? Where did that come from?
I know.
Out of nowhere, the draft's just coming up, then we get the schedule coming out. What's have you been following along? You have a first round pick this year. I do not for the next 3 years, so I will watch the draft, but I'm not deep in it. Are we getting a quarterback run here? What's going on?
I don't know, man. I think there's going to be a team that makes a move to go get a quarterback. I think Malik Willis is going to be the first guy off the board as far as quarterback. I don't know how it falls after that. You know, maybe Pickett after him. But as far as a Commanders fan, I would like to trade back. I think there's a lot of value back half of the draft. Maybe we can collect a couple picks that we lost. So that's what I would like to do. I think we can still get a wide receiver if that's the move. If we don't draft a wide receiver, I think N'Kobe Dean is a close second of somebody that I'd like to take, even though we took a first round linebacker last year in Jamin Davis. That didn't really work out, but N'Kobe Dean is just an absolute monster, an absolute missile all over the field. So from the fans' perspective, that's what I would like to do. Chris Olave is number one on my draft board of wide receivers I would like to take. I don't know about number two. People keep saying Drake London. You know, he's a big body. Washington hasn't had a big body wide receiver in a long time. Maybe ever. So like I said, from a fan's perspective, that's where I'm at. But you know, craziest thing to me is a lot of guys got the Lions taking Sauce Gardner number two overall. Taking a corner number two just seems like wild to me. I feel like if you can get him at two, you might be able to get him at five. So you know, it looks like Aiden Hutchinson might be the consensus number one for Jacksonville. It's going to be interesting to see. I think after Aiden Hutchinson, literally anything can happen to 31 or 32.
I don't even know if Aiden Hutchinson's a lock to go number one.
Yeah. Who do you think?
The lineman, maybe one
Evan
of the,
Neal?
The Neal or the guy from NC State, Akeem Ekwonu.
Yeah.
I'm just pulled up CBS Sports right now, and they got their I know mock drafts or whatever, but I'm looking at 3 mock drafts. They all were updated yesterday. One guy's got Aiden Hutchinson going number one overall, and the next guy's got Trayvon Walker from Georgia going number one, and then the last guy's got the tackle I just said from NC State going number one overall. So who knows what's going on there?
Not us, apparently.
And it's Trent Baalke. You never know what he's going to do.
Yeah.
But you didn't even mention the best Ohio State wide receiver.
What's his name? Wilson?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the best.
Yeah, is he?
Oh, yeah. He's great. He's...
Okay, then maybe that's why. I just like Olave's got the speed to get downfield. You know, so that's kind of what I liked. But shoot, if Wilson's there, we can take him too.
This is not a knock on Olave. They're both very good. But Garrett Wilson is he's the dude there. He's the dude. I think the Cowboys are going to take a receiver in the first round this year.
Insane.
I mean, that seems like something they would do, wouldn't it?
Are they going to move up to get a wide receiver like Jerry Jones said? He said he'd like to move up in this draft.
Potentially. I mean, right? Wouldn't he have to move up for that? What else would they move up for? Yeah. They're not going to move up for a lineman. They're not going to move up for maybe a defensive lineman, but they move up for sexy picks.
Yeah.
And a sexy pick is getting a wide receiver. Now, I think it's dumb if they do that. They also might need to move up for a cornerback because one of their cornerbacks could be arrested here pretty soon.
I thought he was cleared.
Was he clear? I thought he was just being a person of it. He was being talked about.
Yeah. They cleared him of all charges, but they did. So here's the issue with that. Is, you know, they advised him to go talk to the police, and once he did, then they got their suspects, and so we might have a little snitch situation on our hands, which, you know, by all means, if you know something, say something, but might not be good for you when you make it back to the streets.
But he also was in the car, I think, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's gonna know. And he could also be something like if it was a hit and run, right?
No, it was a drive-by.
Or as a drive-by, so like, I mean, there's, I don't know, I'm probably talking, if they said he's clear, I don't know, I thought it was still up in the air, if things were going on. Did they clear him yesterday then?
No, it was...
Okay, because I thought he was...
yesterday. It's been a couple days.
Okay, because I thought he was being questioned. That's all I saw.
Okay.
Over the weekend, but no, I mean, they might need a corner, another corner or something. Interesting though, draft. Lots of things going on right now with a week out from the draft. But we'll be back next week. How about this? Next week we'll come prepared with some draft props.
Perfect.
Let's.
You know what we didn't do either is
baseball.
Yeah.
I know. I remembered right after.
So did I.
I was gonna give out Steve Kwan 50-1 AL Rookie of the Year. He's come down to earth a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
But. There's still some props out there. Maybe we'll take a look at the updated odds and do that next week.
All right, sounds good.
We'll get the NFL draft props next week, and we'll take a look at some baseball so far in the season props as well. I think that's a good place to stop here. We'll be back next Monday with all that stuff. Thanks everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you again.